Hey podcast, before we get into podcast, when I say hey podcast, I mean all of you who are listening. So first of all, thank you for listening. Second of all, two little things for you to know about before we get into today's podcast. One, the Monday to Monday playlist that Mike Boyd and I curate each week on Monday with a lot of incredible music from a ton of emerging stars, especially if you're into Latin trap and hip hop. It's really made for you. Obviously, if you're Caleb and you love metal, not for you. But if you are the majority of people that enjoy hip hop or Latin trap, very, very much up for you. And so you can see that on Apple and on Spotify, Monday to Monday. I'm not sure exactly what, if you search Monday to Monday, it should pop up. That should be good. Search Monday to Monday on those two platforms to subscribe to the playlist. And also, I'm traveling a bunch, some canceled because of Corona, but others still on, and that is GaryVaynerchuk.com/events. Go check that out, a bunch of speaking engagements. I know I have Vegas a couple times here in the spring and many other events, so Edmonton, stand up. And so I can't wait to see you there. Hope you go, and I hope you listen, and I hope you enjoy this podcast.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
What's up, podcast? For today's episode, Gary sits down with the man behind Walmart's e-commerce business, Mark Lohr. They talk about sports cards, their early entrepreneurial traits, and why they want you to pull the weeds. So make sure to hit them up and leave a review to let us know what you thought, and I hope you enjoy.
If you bought Giannis rookie cards, you could have bought 5,000 Giannis's as a normal kid last October for $125 a piece. They're $2,500 a piece now.
Wow.
The market's exploding.
Wow. Is it old market exploding too?
Well, the old market's gold. So because I've been looking at this for 2 years, I really did some homework. I would have thought my going in thesis, and I grew up in the game, was, oh, when the economy collapses, this shit must tumble.
Yeah.
The reality is there's just not enough supply.
Yeah.
Like during the 2008 recession, like the high-end Mickey Mantle, Jackie Robinson's, Jordan rookies went down 20%. Nothing.
Wow.
On the flip side, these are things that compound 500
You could definitely, it's fun. Like you could also like buy all the, like you could say Nolan Ryan 10s, I want to own all the 10s. Like you can, you could just go out there and own
and, the market. And I think if you're smart and you don't, correct, and if you get smart and you don't do Nolan Ryan because you realize really there's no cultural reason for Nolan Ryan to ever matter again.
Yeah.
But you do it with basketball because you realize basketball is basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm buying up Wilt Chamberlain rookies and like Oscars and like Dr. J's because basketball culture is the next 25 to 50 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a documentary here on Netflix, a documentary there, and so you see where I'm going?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm actually buying up Rodman rookies and Pippen rookies, two guys I don't particularly love, but this 10-part series documentary that's coming out on the last season of the Bulls has everybody excited.
Interesting.
You see where I'm going?
Yeah, yeah, you're getting ahead of it.
So,
so you do multiples?
Of like I put millions of dollars into actual sports cards in the last 8 months.
That's amazing.
I bought 53 LeBron rookies for $1,000 a piece in April, and now they're fucking $8,000 a piece.
Oh my God.
And liquid. If I listed them right now, $400,000. Yeah. And by the way, it's now also got me excited for a baseball season for the first time in a long time. I'm not betting long on baseball, but now that I'm in the cocoon, I'm having fun. So Acuna, Juan Soto, Mookie Betts, Bellinger.
That Trout. Like,
Trout's expensive. And he's boring.
Yeah.
I like the Latin players.
Okay.
Tatis Jr., Vlad.
Yeah.
Vlad. There's some real stuff, man.
Yeah.
You should really look into it.
Yeah, no, I dabbled a little bit.
Yeah,
I feel like I could just fall into it. You know, I was a huge collector. Do you know?
So,
I don't know if you know. Did we talk about this?
No, but I think it's what we should. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Are we going?
Yeah.
Good. So we'll.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody! You've been listening to a little bit of sports card conversation with Mark Lohr and I. Actually, Mark, why don't you first introduce yourself, and then we'll get into it. A little bit about who you are, and then we'll get right into it.
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm currently running Walmart's e-commerce business, but you know, I've always been an entrepreneur. Started a bunch of businesses, sold one to Amazon, sold the recent one to Walmart. That's how I got part of Walmart, and been running Walmart's e-com business the last 3.5 years now.
So let's take it way back. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Staten Island, New York, till I was about
how old are you now?
Fifth grade. I'm 48.
Okay, keep going.
Yeah.
To about fifth grade?
Fifth grade, and then moved to a place called Lincroft, New Jersey, right next to Red Bank, New Jersey, mm-hmm. exit 109 on the Parkway, because that's what people do when they talk about New Jersey, right?
It's true.
Right near Bruce Springsteen. Actually, I was I actually went to the same gym as Bruce. And when I was 16 years old, I was in the gym and he was, we were both just two people in the gym downstairs, you know, in the kind of the garage. And he like looks over and he goes, "Hey man, you want to spot me on the bench press?" And that was like, oh my God.
Highlight of your life.
I went to school the next day. I'm like, you know who asked me to spot them? And people are like, nah, come on, man.
No photos back then.
Yeah, exactly.
What kind of kid were you?
I was very scrappy, entrepreneurial. I did every business you could possibly imagine as a kid, from lemonade stand as a really little kid to car washes, lawn mowing, weed picking, newspapers, recycling,
snow shoveling. That was a big one for me in this New Jersey area.
I mean, anything. And I would basically just outwork anyone.
It's
you know?
Funny. One of my friends, go ahead.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. My friend reached out to me. He's like, who grew up with me. He's like, you know, you've told all the good stories about us as kids. He's like, but you haven't talked about your biggest hustle business. And I'm like, and I was excited. I was like, what? And he's like, bro, you don't remember that in Christmas time, we would gather together and you would ring the door. We would ring people's doorbell and say, "Hey, ma'am, would you like to pay us $1 for singing Christmas carols?" He's like, you were a nice Jewish boy ringing the doorbell and saying, "Hello, ma'am, would you like to pay us $1 for Christmas carols? Hit it, boys, dashing through the snow." I mean, like literally anything for a buck.
Yeah, I was like that.
So great. So obviously I associate super well.
Working hard too, you know, like it would be like, I would just like pick weeds for like 12 straight hours and it was like, fine.
Mark,
like,
you know, back if you moved in fifth grade, so you were older than me. Great. So like literally when you were in Jersey and I was, you know, 25 exits away from you, which means we basically got the same snowstorms.
Yeah.
And when I tell you that my friends still resent me for the fact, because I was also a charismatic leader as a kid, so I could get the energy up. Everyone would run outside. No school. Yeah. Nirvana. Everybody run outside, sleds in hand, ready to go. And I would literally will everybody after a 20-minute conversation into literally shoveling snow for 9 hours. They hate me, yeah. But it taught me a lot.
I had the same kind of mentality. It was just weird.
It was in you.
Yeah.
People always ask me, they're like, "How'd you learn?" I'm like, it was in me.
Yeah.
I didn't read a business book when I was six.
By the way, we were talking about sports cards. So what I also did in high school is I started a company called The Mint, which basically bought cards direct from the manufacturers. And I, all summer long, put together sets with my really close friend, Lax.
Everybody needs a Lax.
Yeah, Lax. Lax Chandra.
Lax was first name?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought Lax was like classic, like Mike Lax Zakaros, yeah, and you have to like cut it short.
Laxman.
Lax was the first
Lax
name?
Is short for Laxman. Yeah.
I love it.
And we would literally go in the basement.
What year sets?
Cases.
87.
87.
Yeah.
The worst possible year.
Yeah, but the reason I guessed it before you said it.
We put together hundreds of sets.
Bro, it was the apex moment.
Yeah.
Every single kid for Hanukkah and Christmas during the 87 set got in. Every kid in my junior high got a set of 87 tops. Yeah. That was
and
the
86 tops traded the year before.
Yeah,
too.
But that was harder to get stuff. You'd have to go to the US-1 flea market.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Well, we used to order. We ordered direct.
Yeah, you were a little more advanced than me.
We had the 86 top trade. We go to sports, you know, trading shows.
You had American parents that probably knew how to do that. My like
also
Russian parents were like, what?
Like 1,000 Pete Incovillias. And, that's just bombed. You know, do you remember Pete Incovillia?
Of course, dude. Like he was a monster.
He was a monster. And then we had 1,000.
I actually didn't go after Pete, but I went after Benito Santiago.
Oh,
I went heavy on Benito Santiago. I crushed with Eric Davis.
Oh.
I thought Eric Davis was the next Willie Mays.
No, Eric Davis too. So Eric Davis and Pete Incovillia, those are the two. But Eric Davis, we learned a really good lesson. We had like 200 Eric Davises stolen. It was out on the trade show and a thing.
Fuck.
And we just turned around like, "Where's Eric Davis? Where's Eric Davis?" Somebody stole
it. Yeah.
Why do we have 200 out on the table?
You know, it's crazy. The other guy, you know who I got murdered on? Corey Snyder.
Oh, yeah. The Olympic card?
He got destroyed on him. I thought he was Pete Rose in the making. That was that era. But you know what's funny? Where did you do shows? Malls? JCCs?
Yeah, malls.
Fire stations? All that
shit,
right?
Yeah, all that shit. Yeah, fire stations,
we had the same.
Malls,
I mean, it makes so much sense that we have so much crossover. It makes so much sense.
But then I started to... this is the thing. Right idea, but didn't know about really grading at the time. But
well, grading,
I basically, bought every Cal Ripken Jr. I could find. And this was, you know, before he really became like, you know, what he is today.
Did you get hot because he had that hitting streak? Because I remember I went to a bar mitzvah around that time and everyone was talking about Ripken. Like, he was just such a great player at that point too.
Yeah.
But you had rookies, 82 tops?
Yeah, like, 82 tops. I just had like hundreds of them. And then it turns out, like, I went to recently, you know, went to get them valued. And of course, they're not graded. And people looking at them and going, I thought this was mint, but no, it's like a six. It's like, no.
Because when you and I were in the game, mint. Here's why. Because you and I came up in the game when there was nothing around centering.
Yeah.
It was all corners and creases.
I know.
It was all corners and creases.
What we thought was mint still, the difference, like mint starts at like, you know, six or seven now, and then you get the really eight and then nine, and then 10 is like gem mint, perfect, you know.
When did cards become not cool to you? Like, what happened? So you're a little bit older than me. So it kind of like you went through high school during the era that it was still on fire.
Yeah.
Were you in the game?
High school, yep. Did it in college.
Yep. It was still then. That's right.
Still was into it. And then I think I got really depressed when like grading suddenly, if a card wasn't graded, it wasn't worth anything. And then I'd get some cards graded and they come back like bad grades. And I'm like, oh man, everything.
It's
like,
over.
All these rookie cards, like I bought for like these Cal Ripken rookies, I bought them for like $30 mint rookies, which would, if there was a PSA 9 or something, would be worth,
you yes, know, hundreds,
thousand or
and
something,
you thousands, know, hundreds, to thousand, your
yeah.
Point.
And they're basically now they're coming back six, five, like it was just so depressing. I'm like, oh, so this card is like still only worth $20. It was just, I was like, you know what, forget this. Then I got like a resurgence, you know, like in my mind of like, okay, I'm gonna just like get back into it, start buying some tens, some like really good.
When you got older and had,
you know,
a little
older,
more,
had some more money and stuff. Uh-huh. And then I just.
Yeah. Evolves, yeah. Ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
What was it? So what happened? When did you take your entrepreneurial game to the next level? College? After college?
College, I did a hedge fund in college, learned a ton there. That was kind of a cool thing. But the next.
Well, let's talk about that. That's a pretty intense leap. Yeah. In college, you decide you know what a hedge fund is?
Well, I was so into stocks as a kid. I started tracking stocks like 10 years old, like in a book, like Kellogg, here's the price every Sunday. And then I started reading books on the McGee and Edwards technical analysis of stock trends and derivative books in seventh grade.
Were you a good student?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
No.
So what did you do for college?
I was reading, they were reading like, you know, history and reading literature, and I was reading, you know, books on derivatives.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. I would sit in class because I knew I was going to be in the wine business at that point and would memorize the Wine Spectator and would like look at my friends who were making fun of me that I was a bad student. I'm like, you're reading the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you. Like, who gives a fuck Catcher in the Rye?
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll figure out the theme of that fucking story in life.
No, Cliff Notes tell you really quick what that
story was. I couldn't even read that shit.
Yeah, no. I
that yellow thing?
Yeah,
I didn't fuck
thing.
With that.
But, yeah, I didn't get through that either. I got through this. I could read the summary of the Cliff Notes.
They do like a one-page summary. I could sit and take the test and like draw a Bart Simpson-like character and write like I used to write nice. They would give me a test in English. Miss Horvath, if you're listening to this, if anybody knows Miss Horvath from North Hunter in high school, 1990 to 1994, please send her this because she might remember this. She would give me a literature test and I would do two things. Draw a character. Literally, in the answer number one, draw this Bart Simpson-looking like character. And number two, write her a charming sentence of like, I really like the way that you handled Brian Bennington's outburst last week. And, you know, I know that I might not be achieving to the level that you want, but I really, really like what you're doing for Megan Murphy. Like, she's like, you know, like, and
that's so funny.
Rarely worked, but once in a blue moon, I'd get like a B for that.
I was the same in literature. There was one test I'll never forget. It was like, I knew nothing. I didn't read the books. I knew nothing. And I just sat down, put my name on the front. And I said, you know, when you're done, can you bring your paper up and go to study hall? And she said, yeah, when you're finished, yeah, just go to study hall. So I got up, gave it in. She goes, Mark, you didn't answer anything.
You're like,
I said, well, I don't know anything. She said, you know, this is going to be a zero. I said, well, I assumed it would be zero because I didn't do anything. And then she said, you know, this means you're going to get an F in this class. I said, yeah, I pretty much assumed that.
Yeah. I assumed that walking in day one. Before I would cover my book with a brown paper bag, I already knew an F was well on its way. All right. So you start a hedge fund. Did you make money?
I actually did. Not
as much as you thought.
Recommend. Well, not the way. It was pretty much luck.
Yeah.
And then it would the stress of doing it as it a like, kid with people's money. I'm like, yeah, forget this.
Whose money? Whose money were you taking?
It was like so funny. We had like this a couple like wealthy kids on campus got the money from their dad, and it was like I don't even know how who would give like a couple college kids some money. I did this with a friend. So then we actually made some money, but it was too stressful.
And then
we gave money back, shut it down. And then the next thing I did, I went to work in a bank because I knew stocks and derivatives and everything as a kid. And so I went to work at Bankers Trust and then got into financial risk management, which was kind of a hot thing then where like you're managing, like what's the risk that the bank's taking on their proprietary books and derivatives and options and stocks and bonds and stuff like that.
Arb and hedge.
Yeah. So I got into risk, which was pretty cool, right up my alley. I was always good at math and stuff. So I liked that.
So this was early mid 20s?
Yeah. Early 20s.
And how did you, so you were having fun, making some money.
Having fun, making some money.
Saving some money.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah,
saving some money. And then, you know, got this idea with this guy Lev that you know there was no certification exam for.
Wait, so Lax Lev, like you're into these
elves, yeah.
Yeah. So if there's a loose sitting out there right now who wants to do business with you, they should reach out. Go ahead.
Basically, in this field of financial risk management, it's pretty new. There's a chartered financial analyst. There's a, you know, CPA. There's all these, you know, certification exams. Nothing for financial risk managers. So I kind of just got the idea, like, why don't we create a certification exam for risk managers? Everyone's like, dude, you're like 24 years old. Like, who's going to take your exam? Like, how you can't just certify people.
You're like, sure, I can.
Why not? I'm going to certify
people. That's how everything works.
Yeah, I'm just going to certify people. And so
we should trade rocks, and then we believe that cash was right.
Yeah.
And now people think cryptocurrency. I mean,
so
of course you can.
So it's crazy. So people say all the time, they say, well, how do you do something like that? How do you get started? I said, first of all, you don't overthink it. Basically, put up a website, and we said, here's everything that's going to be on the exam. Here's what we're going to test you for. And we picked the date like a year out. And we said, here's the date, $500. Here's everything on the test.
How'd you market the website?
You know, keyword in Google, keyword search stuff.
What year was this?
This was 96.
Mm-hmm. So it's pre-Google.
Maybe it wasn't Google. Maybe it was the search engine. Yahoo. Yeah, it was search engine. Yeah, Yahoo.
Ask Jeeves. I remember the big moment was when they dropped the ass. They're like, now it's just Jeeves. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Dog pile.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're, I'm going into like hardcore old
dog
school.
Pile. Yeah, I remember.
Do you remember dog pile?
Lycos. Lycos. Yep. Yeah, Lycos.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So you did that.
So, and then I started getting checks.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh shit, we got to write this exam. So me and Lev like sat down and like wrote
Tell
this
real quick,
because
this is fun for young entrepreneurs. Tell me the moment when you came home. And in your mailbox, you open it, and there's an act. That first
$500 check.
You were like, "Holy shit!"
I was like, "Holy shit, that's really funny." Some guy actually like sent a check in. Like, that's really funny. Like, does he know there's like nothing behind this? And then another check. We got 34 checks. We made 17 grand in checks. And we're like, then we looked at each other. Lev and I were like, "I guess we have to write this exam."
What was Lev doing?
Lev was actually a risk manager also at Credit Suisse, and. And we
you knew
together.
Him from school, or you?
No, we worked together.
You liked him right away.
Yeah, he's actually a rocket scientist. He's a nuclear, like, you know, guy from Russia.
Yeah,
this Russian guy, Lev.
Levs, those fucking
Russians.
He became
a good friend, and it was just fun. So we sat like weekend after weekend writing this exam. Now I'm like, you know, he's older than me, but I'm 24. You know, like just learning the field, and we're like writing this examination that we're going to give people. And then we wrote the exam. We went down.
Thank
to
God,
New York.
Lev was there.
The guy, exactly. Yeah. Lev. We administered the exam to these 34 people, and we got back, and we're like, all right,
now
who do we pass and who do we fail? So we basically just decided we were going to like. You know, the top 50% we're going to pass and the bottom 50% we're going to fail. We just drew a line. We sent the certificates out, said, hey, you passed. You're an FRM. And now, by the way, this exam is given in like 50 countries around the world to like 10,000 people a year or something crazy like that today.
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Is Lev running it?
No. It's like
You guys sold it?
We gave it away. It's a long story. But
fair enough. But all right. So you build this thing. Then what happens?
Yeah, then that was kind of that. So we built it, worked on it and stuff. We gave it to the not-for-profit association called GARP.
Okay.
And and just got the bug for entrepreneurship. It was like really fun to like basically just create something from nothing.
So what happened
and then
next?
I'm about 7 years into my banking career. I'm chief risk officer now at San Juan Bank.
As a youngster?
Yeah, like 27 years old, yeah. Basically Whiz making kid. A ton of money.
Okay.
I'm making like $500,000 a year at 27.
Right.
I'm like top of the world, chief risk officer. Life couldn't be better for someone my
like
age. It was great. And then I just had this thing, like I didn't want to be sitting here 10, 20 years. I didn't want to be in banking. I wanted to start a business and be an entrepreneur. So I just got the nerve up and decided I'm going to quit and be an entrepreneur. And I just went into my boss's office and I just one day I woke up. I just said, I'm going to do it. I went in there and I said, hey, I'm going to quit and be an entrepreneur. And the guy laughed at me.
What year was that?
This was 99.
Yeah. Long before it was cool to do what you did.
Yeah. 99.
Okay.
And he laughed at me, thought I was crazy. Said, hey, didn't you just have a baby? I said, yeah. He said, you know, you're paying you a lot of money. I said, yeah, I know. He said, well, you must have a great idea. So I don't have an idea yet, but I know I need to like focus and go all in on this thing and just basically cut the line and just go all in. And he's like, man, you're serious. He's like, well, here, I'm going to put 50 grand in. I don't know what it is, but like, if you're crazy enough to do this, I think you're going to make it work.
Wow.
And he put 50 grand in. I didn't know anybody with money at the time. Like, so he put 50 grand in and basically he introduced me to two friends and they introduced me to two friends. I wound up pitching like 120 angel investors.
Right. Cause this was the first
VCs
era.
Or anything.
Right. This was the first era of like this Silicon Valley. Like this was a hot time.
Yeah.
99 was similar to now where like,
the NASDAQ crashed like a year later.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying the story, because there's a bunch of dopes right now about to quit, think they're going to do something and lose. And I want to make sure that they're very careful to make sure they're good and they love, you know, they think this through because it's cool again. And this was the first time it was cool to do that. And so what was the business? Hey guys, sorry to interrupt the podcast. I know I don't do it often with the mid-roll thing, but I need you to know what I'm doing on Pinterest. Especially if you're active on Pinterest, pinterest.com/GaryVEE. Danny, Katie, and the team and I have been really stepping up, and there's a lot of interesting exclusive stuff going on there, and wine stuff, menu stuff, content stuff. I just really think you need to check it out, pinterest.com/GaryVEE. And now back to the podcast.
It was a sports stock market. It was actually where you can buy and sell, it's called the pit. You can buy and sell athletes like stocks. We had a ticker, we had market makers, we had price charts and things. And you can basically go in and buy like.
I remember, I will tell you my pit story.
You know the pit?
Not only do I know the pit, Mark, I decided that Josh Beckett and the Marlins were gonna beat the Yankees in the World Series.
Yeah.
So I went on the pit and bought a ton of Josh Beckett rookie cards.
Oh, that's so funny.
And the night they beat the Yanks and he like pitched the gem, I sold them all and made a nice little chunk.
Oh, that is crazy.
So you sold at the Tops.
Yeah, sold at the Tops. And it was basically inside of a year. Started it, built it, sold it inside of a year. And
exit?
It was a
solid?
Yes, we actually gave money, a little bit money. It was $5 million we raised and we sold it for 5.7. So people made a little bit of money in a time when the market crashed.
Yeah, you learned.
And everyone was like, I can't believe I got my money back, like on this thing. Like I lost everywhere else, like the whole market.
Yeah, it was a shit market.
It was just a shit show. And so everyone, I had 60 angel investors and they're all like, hey, listen, this was amazing. Like if you do something again, count me in.
Right, because you won during a time that few did.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was
a great era for me too with winelibrary.com. Like I was really winning then because the jokes we were making about people spending money on TV before we started this podcast, I was doing the reason I knew the pit was I'm like, this is innovation.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to hold my, you know, everybody right now in the sports card world is like, who's this guy? I've been doing this the whole time, quietly in a different way. And like the pit was probably one of the more, it's funny you bring that up. It's one of the times I really, really looked at the market for the first time post being into it. From 87
to 94. It's so funny thinking back, though. It's so easy to look back and say we just it could have been huge. Like we just had to create a proxy for the athlete instead of using the actual card. And if we would have done that and just like.
But the concept of the card, like I think physical goods are a real part of society. I think there's some startups right now building that are going to build a true marketplace that are going to hold the cards.
Yeah.
And it's going to work.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's going to work.
I think that's right.
So the pit happens. I understand you put a W up, a tiny W, but a huge W in my mind because I know how hard it was to navigate during that time. You found this exit. Obviously, I understand why the angels, I would do the same. I'm an angel and do that at times. They're like, okay, this kid's got it.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Yeah, and then inside of Topps. I was out. They sent me to Seattle to run this game company called WizKids.
Right.
And that's like, I'd always been like really about numbers and analytics and spreadsheets. And I was so mathematical. And that was the first real experience. I think everyone needs this to get that, the other side of the story, you know, this sort of softer side. And the gamers, it was all passion driven. Everything that gamers thought about was like related to the quality of the product and passion, and numbers didn't matter. And so I remember I made a big mistake. Actually, there was a game board, and the game board was like, you know, let's say it was 14 inches or something, you know, the game board the gamers played and stuff. And it was like way more expensive than like a 12 inch. It was like 2 inches shorter. It was way cheaper. We're going to save a ton of money, like $1 million a year. And I'm like, guys, did they really care about these extra 2 inches? Come on, 12 inch looks just as good as 14, and we're going to save $1 million. And some people in the gaming industry said, no, you can't do that. You don't understand. And I said, it seems I'm going to make these squares a little bit short, you know, whatever. Disaster. They rebelled, and it was the whole thing blew up. But I kind of was like appreciated that it's not all math and numbers and
science. Was that the first time that really in your face you're like, fuck, the gray matters as much as the black and white?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gray matter. I really learned a lesson.
I came from the, you know, it's funny. We have so many similarities, and I came from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
I was so gray and intuitive.
Yeah.
Right? I sold my entire card collection and went into comic books and toys 4 months before the market collapsed.
Wow.
Because I was gray.
Yeah, you're intuitive.
I was gray.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, and over the last 20 years, I've developed more appreciation for the black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But I still am a gray leader with a respect for black and white. And I would argue that you're probably, based on your natural talents, a black and white leader with a respect for gray.
Yeah, no, I think it's funny you say that. I think I've actually gone to the other side.
Wow.
I've gone full on. So like I am...
Well, that's even more awesome and speaks to why you went on to have two monsters after that, because it speaks to you have the natural talent to be such a juggernaut in black and white. I can only close the gap on black and white so much.
Yeah.
I can only get so interested in numbers. That's interesting.
Well, I know what I don't know too. Like the numbers looks great, but I often probably know 80, 90% of the time I'm looking to why the numbers aren't telling the story.
You know, well, the numbers, as you know, almost always are looking backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's where people get fucked.
Yep,
they're like, Gary, this and that. I'm like, that's nice. That's last year.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck about that because we have to sell this thing tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens next?
So then got this idea for diapers.com, which was
a beast.
And literally people say, how do you get the idea? I was just on Google searching keywords to see how many times they were searched. Back then you could see how many times they were searched.
I remember.
And it was like diapers were searched 200,000 times in the month. And I'm like, that's so interesting. You can't really buy diapers online, not even Amazon. You couldn't really buy them at good prices. They were like inflated prices. And I'm like, wow, diapers, everyone needs diapers. Like, and it's a pain in the butt. If I can deliver them overnight, great service at good prices, isn't every mom in America going to like want to do that? And that was the original thesis going in. And people said, that's great, but you can't ship diapers overnight because you're going to lose a ton of money. And they're a loss leader for brick and mortar for a reason. And I said, well, yeah, but that's right. They're a loss leader for a reason because they drive people into the store. So I'm not going to make money on diapers online. I'm going to make money on everything else. And so I just had to go. And this is pretty much self-funded. I did this with another friend, Vinny. And
this is just too good. I need a fucking a Reservoir Dogs like poster with you, Lev, Lax, and Vinny. I mean, I'm not sure if you've actually been a good entrepreneur or you're undercover mob life and you just like force people into like, you're going to make this, you're going to buy these diapers at a loss or you're going to hear from fucking Lev.
You know, it's so funny though. Like people, so literally started this business and we're selling a box of diapers literally for 90 cents. So we're going to buy them for a dollar and sell them for 90 cents. P&G wouldn't sell us. Huggies wouldn't sell us. Kimberly Clark. We had to go to Costco and BJ's.
Buy them,
and then sell them and make lose money
that.
In every box.
I knew that.
Yeah, we lost money in every box.
Of course, loss leaders are smart.
And people like, but because we were
how much funding did you guys put in? Like, how much did you guys give yourself a runway?
I mean, ourselves to start it. It was just me and him did everything. We put it like a couple hundred grand in each or something. It was like
super
not
small
a lot of money. Yeah.
No. How much did you pay for diapers.com or did it start as diapers.com?
It started as 1-800 diapers because we couldn't afford diapers.com.
I figured. That's why I asked the question.
And diapers.com was 600 grand. the domain.
At the time when you bought it.
Yeah.
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 Big number.
But that we had raised like $4 million Series A.
So what happened was you and Vinny got enough action going and then you went and raised capital.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got to about 11 million run rate and we had strong cohorts and things were, yeah, we kind of bootstrapped it. We were
literally got it to almost $1 million a month in revenue. Yeah,
driving to BJ's, buying the diapers, doing
fuck you,
selling them out.
Seriously.
Yeah.
11 million run rate on, I mean, at that point you had somebody with a van going to BJ's, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not only that.
At first it was you in the car, right?
Us in the car.
That's
yeah.
all I needed.
And here's the funny thing was here.
By the way, kids, the most important part of this whole fucking story is this. When you're the kind of kid that grabs weeds for 4 hours a day or shovels snow for 7 hours or makes sets all summer long while everybody else is playing, you build a gear inside of you that leads to the humility to actually go and pick up the diapers.
Yeah.
At BJ's, even yeah. after you've had some levels of success, even after you made $500,000 a year when you were 27, even yeah. like I always, my mom and I always make jokes to each other. I always, when she does something, I'm always like, you can take a girl from Russia, but you can't take Russia from the girl. And that's how I think about it. Like so many of my friends are like, why don't you hire people to like bid for you on eBay? Yeah. And like, what are you doing on the sports car thing that I'm hot on right now? I'm like, I'm going to do the work.
Yeah, you do the work.
I do the work.
By the way, that's how you learn. You do the work.
No shit.
You learn the intimate details of everything. But anyway, 1,000 cases a day.
I apologize one more time, Mark, because I want value for the audience. This is why I don't begrudge students. I don't begrudge smart people or people that like to learn. I begrudge just staying only in classrooms and books because you never do, which means you actually don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We got up to 1,000 cases a day. Now, it was untenable. Like, you just couldn't.
Yeah, where the fuck? BJ's and Costco were pumped.
Yeah. Well, we would have to clear out multiple BJ's. Anyway.
Were you making, like, backroom deals? Were you, like, did you have to go to the managers and be like, hey, let's save each other a bunch of time. Why don't you just keep the fucking things on the pallets? We'll come and pick it up.
That's exactly what we started doing.
Of course.
Yeah. But here's the great thing. We had this deal where they would do that if we left them diapers for their customers. We'd always leave them some diapers, right? Then we couldn't do more than 1,000 cases a day. It was just impossible.
Where the fuck was your warehouse?
We had to buy from Procter & Gamble.
I get it. Where was your warehouse?
Like garage, yard, like
Jersey?
Yards. Yeah.
Love it.
So then we had to buy direct from Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble still doing 1,000 cases a day. Like, we're not selling you. We think it's not gonna work. We're not selling you. Like, dude, we can't buy all the diapers. So then we said, all right, you know what? We know what we're gonna do. We're gonna go into BJ's. We're taking all their diapers. I don't care if they don't stack the shit. Like, we're taking all the diapers. You know why? Because when they screamed at us and they said, like, you can't take all the diapers, and I'm like, yeah, we can. And we did. And they're like, I'm like, listen, you could fix this. Just call Procter & Gamble. You can fix this. And they did. They called Procter & Gamble, and Procter & Gamble called us and said, hey, listen, we still don't believe in you. BJ's is a really important customer. They told us to sell you, so we will, but we don't think it's going to work. And we still think it's, you know, and that's how we got Procter & Gamble. And then what's ironic.
Once you got Procter, you got everybody else.
Yeah. And what's ironic is, like, just, I don't know, a year ago, I'm walking around the office and Procter & Gamble's in there and I see the presentation and I pop in. I'm like, hey, what are you guys doing? It's like, oh, we're just talking about market share of diapers, how it's like, you know, X percent online and it's going to 70% online and how people are never going to come to the store to buy diapers anymore. I'm like, oh, interesting. Okay, great. Great. I just walked out with a big smile.
I love that shit. Yeah, that's...
I'm like, oh, man.
How much... actually, it's a fun question because this... How much do you play for that moment? Honestly, on some real shit. Yeah, me too.
I would argue with you that I believe
that's the only reason I do what I do for a living.
Yeah, it's just
fun. That feeling...
That's so fun.
Like, the feeling of all my team who was making fun of me behind my back for buying sports cards... A year and a half ago, and I know them. I'm watching them, and they're giggling behind my back. Silly, he liked it when he was a kid. Like, it's not going to work. To then, like, watch them all scramble now and, like, try to, like, they're all borrowing money from their parents to, like, put all into sports cards. It's like, I do it for that,
yeah,
not for
too.
The, it's the game.
Me too.
For that I told you so moment.
Yeah. I do fun things like that all the time, even, like, you know, go to the horse track, figure out a way to, like, beat the system. And it could be, like, turn, like, you can't, bet too much because you'll move the odds, but you know, bet $100 and be guaranteed to win like 120 is really fun. Like it's $20. I don't need $20. It's just fun.
It's just that you figured it out.
Did
you love the Mammoth?
I used to card count in Atlantic City. You know how fun that was going down there and like as a kid, as a teenager,
I'm
and coming back.
I'm so glad
and making
I didn't
money.
Have this math skill level. I would have been completely obnoxious. Like, you know, I was more on like, I think like, you know, it's funny. I really have the gray version of this. I'm like, all the things, literally everything that I thought America was going to do happened. Like, for example, right now, I 100% know that straight young men are going to wear makeup in 12 years. That male makeup is a real category.
Wow.
Money in the bank. Can't wait to show this clip in 12 years on whatever the TikTok and Instagram is. It's locked. Yeah. It's already happened. I know.
Wow.
The $1.20. Now, as you can imagine, I'm in the process of building what machine I'm building for infrastructure long term. We played it a little bit different, like, but very similar. But at some point, I'm going to be ready in my career to say, okay, that's what's going to happen. And I'm going to start the Olay or the Glossier or the whatever. And it's, I'm going to sell it for $4 billion and I'm going to call you and be like, I'm ready to buy the Jets and let's go.
Yeah. Well, let me invest first.
Well, I may let you do that. We got to talk sports cards off. Like, it's about to get so uncomfortably hot the next 24 months.
Okay, well, I'm ready to come in now. I've been
You know what it is, Mark? You'll appreciate this. Like, here you are sitting. By the way, because we're wrapping up, diapers.com goes and crushes. He then goes, he sells that to Amazon. He then goes and starts Jet.com. At that point, because it was a great jersey, I always was like, at that point in my career, I was getting so much credit for this little wine business e-commerce thing. I was like, why aren't they looking at the diapers.com guy? He's done it way bigger than me. Then you start Jet, and I see that. I'm like, shit, that's gonna, and I knew, you know, it's funny to hear the Costco BJ story because I remember how you positioned that, and I'm like, that's gonna, and then the Walmart acquisition, which is a huge one, and congratulations on that, and you're still there 3.5 years later, which is an impressive part of the conversation. That was obvious to me. And now you're doing, now you're becoming almost like, you know, now with the way entrepreneurship is, I mean, you literally raced Jerry Rice in the 40 at the NFL Combine this last week. I'm excited that you're starting to get some, I've always thought you were wildly underrated. There's very few people in the last decade that I've watched operate. And now that I'm getting to know you a little bit better, we had a meeting not too long ago and now we're doing this. I'm like, oh, this makes sense. Like your playbook is something I deeply respect. And I've always felt that out of all the entrepreneurs in this last decade, that you were quite under the radar. And, you know, I don't know your personality traits. And there's, you know, there's plenty of people building $1 trillion companies that nobody's ever heard of. And there's plenty of people that have 1 million followers on Instagram that are going to flop in 4 minutes that people think are good at entrepreneurship. But I've always really respected you from afar. And I really like that you like sports cards.
Oh, thanks.
where I'm going with that, though, is like, I think the reality is that it's a skill that never, I almost feel like it's a skill that never gets out of your body.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, like I'm sitting here with you right now, you're 48, I'm 44. And when I tell you, I'm like, my God, like we're going to be having this conversation in 40 years.
Yeah, I know.
Like we're going to be sitting somewhere, Mars, the track, at a flea market, you know, in a boardroom. And we're literally going to be like, oh, we've known each other for 40 years. And we said 40 years ago that we would be sitting here doing this shit. And that's just the nature of the game.
I don't know what it is. I have more drive now than I did any time in my life before.
Oh, it's not even close. I think it's momentum of being in your spot. Like, it's not even close. I would take a shit on 28-year-old me.
Yeah.
That kid couldn't even compete with me.
I feel the same way.
I couldn't, he's not even in my world.
I feel the same
that,
way.
That dude sucks.
Yeah. I feel the same
way. I would beat the shit out of him.
Yeah. I could work harder now than I did then. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Anyway, what anything that we didn't touch on as we wrap up here? Any parting wisdom for the kids and the not kids that are listening?
No, anybody who's thinking about starting a business, though, I'd say go for it.
Right, because the loss is worth it, right?
Yeah.
Do you say go for it that blatant because you also realize that regret is scarier than everything, and if it's really in you, whether you completely, like I keep telling people.
Fear is what drives you. I also think like if you're scared to do it and you do it, you're going to put in the best you've got. And that's what it's going to take. But if you put in the best you've got, you're going to make things happen. I don't know where it's going to lead. You're going to go through failures. You might have some ups and downs. But if you just stay at it and just go after it and,
Mark,
and be
relentless. I think once people start making the world about happiness, not money, then this is going to make a lot more logic.
Yes.
Because a lot of people go for it, have a nice home in Summit, New Jersey right now, make $412 a year. Life is good. Kids in private school. Good shit. Jersey Shore house. Like, good shit. Good shit. And they're going to listen to us two Jersey bozos and be like, fuck it. I'm unhappy. I'm going for it.
Yeah.
And the story for Hank is it's actually going to fail. Because what Hank was a number six.
Yep.
He was a number six.
Yeah.
A great number six.
Yep.
You know, it's the Scottie Pippen thing. Scottie Pippen is all-time overrated, in my opinion, because he had a great all-time number one hiding it.
Yeah.
And when he went to Portland and he went to Houston, no. And by the way, Hank right now at 412 a year is listening to us and go for it. Let me just finish this thought and I can see you want to jump in. Go ahead. You have to go?
No, I have to go.
Oh, you have to go to the bathroom. So go. I'll finish this. Go. Oh, yeah, go take a peek. So let me finish my thought. One, I find it fascinating that Mark couldn't hold it. Like, I just think that's all-time interesting out of all the things. Number two, on the Scottie Pippen thing, it's not to razz Scottie, and of course this is coming from a Knicks fan who's bitter. But Hank, if you're listening, Mark's right, not because of the money, but because of the happiness. Because you're 44 and your life is good. But you hate your fucking job. You hate it. You really know you actually hate it. But you like your life. What you need to ask yourself is, do you like your life because of the financial things that are happening and you look happy versus actually being happy? Because I can tell you, when you make that jump and you fail and you have to have the shame, and that's the word I'm going to use, the shame to move your family out of Summit and move into another town. And you got a 12 and a 9-year-old who are now crying because they're going to a different school. And they went from being fancy to maybe less fancy. Like, that is a lot of carnage that most people don't have the stomach for. The problem is that nobody tells you is that at 72 years old, you spend the next 20 years of your life in regret because you weren't happy. And that is not fucking easy. And I don't say this lightly, but when I hear Mark say, go for it, I actually understand it, because I spend a lot more time analyzing what 70 and 80 and 90 year olds say. And I understand why a 44 year old doesn't have the strength to disappoint their kids or to look stupid in front of their friends or to like confuse the world. And it's easier at 27, even with a new kid, than it is at 44, which is why I love the internet. Mark and I are we would be totally different men in our careers if the internet didn't come along. If you listen to his stories, Google and diapers and landing page and $500 check and the pit. We are the byproducts of our age, of the entrepreneurs that had practical opportunity on the internet that would have never existed if we were 40 years earlier. That's what I want for everybody to realize. We understood that, and that's what we navigated on. You can have a side hustle too. So we talked about Hank quitting. Let's talk about Hank instead of golfing for 4 hours on Saturday. Let's talk about Hank instead of coming home and having a glass of wine and watching the news, the Daily Show, or sports. If you're really unhappy with what you do for a living, give me back those 14 hours that you waste each week and set up a landing page, set up an Instagram account around Star Trek or soccer or sports cards. Side hustle practicality with patience where you build it, where Mark and Lev had to look at each other and say, fuck, maybe there's something here now. Notice what he did. He did what I do. Do shit. That's, and then let the market show you there's something there and then grow. Right?
Like, you just got to put the time in, right?
The time.
That's
this
the
goes,
key.
Brother, it's the weeds.
Yeah,
it's pulling the weeds.
You gotta put the
too many people are entitled and don't want to waste their time when their time ain't worth shit.
As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So Dean, take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks, Gary. Today's reviews, The Realest Shit and Gary V Changed My Life, written in by Cheesy Chester and Caleb Poland, say, honesty is difficult for people who lie to themselves constantly. Love this guy. Don't start listening unless you want to change. You can't unhear the truth, bud. keep the dream alive. And secondly, Gary, this podcast gets me in a positive mindset every day. I listen to it at my 9 to 5 and it pushes me through the day and pushes me to do my own thing. I love you, man. Thank you both so much for writing in. And remember, keep leaving reviews because yours could be next.